All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Welcome back to the program. You missed anything in the first couple of hours? Don't forget, you can get us wherever you get your podcasts. Spotify, Apple, Google, or Amazon. Subscribe now. We'll never miss a moment. Lots happening in the first couple of hours. Peter Labardius, David Amber, and Charlie Goldsmith all joining us in the first 2 hours of the show. But now, as we kick off hour number three inside the iconic Electric and Controls downtown studio, my name is Will Nall. It's time for Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Finance or lease a 2021 QX50 and get a no-charge prepaid maintenance from Calgary's original Infinity destination, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane. We say hello to Logan Gordon with today's headlines. Logo, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Will. Busy edition of headlines coming your way. We've got plenty of NHL action to get to on the schedule tonight. Plenty of storylines to dive into. We'll start with the Toronto Maple Leafs taking on the Vegas Golden Knights. Should be a good one tonight. The Maple Leafs fourth in the NHL in points percentage, taking on the 23-14-1 Vegas Golden Knights, who lead the Pacific Division. It's an 8 p.m. puck drop tonight from T-Mobile Arena. And while it's a big game, nobody in Vegas talking about this one tonight, Will, because they were more focused on Jack Eichel, who made his debut at practice for the Vegas Golden Knights in a red non-contact jersey, but 2 months since he had the artificial disc replacement surgery and now back on the ice with his new team. He spoke to the media after practice today and said, look, I'd be out there tonight if I could. They just won't let me. But in all seriousness, he said he's not putting an exact target date on when he expects to be back playing.
And then the second half of your question was, do I have a target date? I was actually thinking about suiting up tonight, but they wouldn't let me go. So, no, I wish. I wouldn't say there's really a target date at this point. I think it's, see how you feel and see how you progress and how confident and comfortable you are. And I think at that point, you'll know. I feel like I'll know mentally and physically and emotionally when I'm ready to go. The team, the organization's been so supportive and, not putting a hard date on when I need to be back or when they would expect me to be back. So it's been, very low pressure. Just, hey, listen, we'll continue to do, what we need to do to get you back to where you feel comfortable enough to compete. And that's sort of been my mindset too. So, no target date. I think, you have different milestones that you want to meet during this process. And, today was one, being back on the ice with other guys and being here in Las Vegas. So we'll just continue to progress from here and see how it goes.
So a big game for the Golden Knights tonight, Will, but you can't blame their fan base for being excited to see their huge trade acquisition on the ice with the team. Doesn't know when he'll be back, and that's probably the smart way to handle it. But Golden Knights fans with a small taste today of what it's going to be like to have Jack Eichel in their lineup soon.
Yeah, I know. Head coach Pete DeBoer said he'll be in a non-contact jersey for a while, but just to see him back on the ice, to be in a team practice, albeit in a red jersey, is pretty awesome. It's going to be awesome when he makes his return to the Vegas lineup. It will not be tonight, but nonetheless, if you're a Golden Knights fan or even a member of that team, to just see him out there, to know that he is inching closer and took another major step in that return today, that's pretty cool. And we talked about the special human moment with Clay Thompson on yesterday's show as he returned after, 31 months away from basketball. It's not going to be as long of an absence for Jack Eichel, but nonetheless, some of the mental challenges he's had in his recovery, the human side of it, no matter how much money is in his bank account, it has not been easy for him. I know that this was probably a pretty cool day for him to be back in a locker room, back with teammates, back on the ice. And the day he sheds the non-contact jersey will be another big step in a return to the Vegas lineup. The bigger question looms as to what they're going to do, but they don't got to worry about that just yet, as this is pretty cool to see him back out with his teammates. They'll play the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight. It'll be a very good hockey game, 8 o'clock. Puck drop in Vegas for that one this evening. First visit to Vegas for Toronto since November of 2019 when Mike Babcock was their head coach. That was actually the final game Babcock had behind the Leafs bench as Sheldon Keefe would take over a couple of nights later in Arizona. So looking forward to this one. A marquee-type matchup with a strong East team against a strong West team. And we'll have no Jack Eichel in it, but still a cool story out of Vegas today.
So the Vegas Golden Knights wait to get Jack Eichel back, while the Pittsburgh Penguins' wait is finally over for Evgeny Malkin to make his season debut. He will play tonight when the team visits the Anaheim Ducks. He has not played this season, recovering from knee surgery that he had back on June 4th. And working his way back into game shape, used the past few weeks as his own mini training camp with the Penguins. He was on the top power play unit practicing with Sidney Crosby, Jake Gensel, and Evan Rodriguez. He also centered the second line at practice between Jeff Carter and Kasperi Kapanen. And, well, he's joining a Penguins team that recently had a 10-game winning streak snapped by the Dallas Stars on Saturday. Head coach Mike Sullivan knows he has the ability to be an impact player. They're not going to rush him back, but he's excited to have Malkin back in their lineup.
Well, he's practiced for quite a while. I think he looks really strong. He's in great shape. He's skating really well. I think, he's such a talented guy. He's the type of player that has the ability to have an impact immediately, and I'm sure he will in this game. You know, it will take him time to capture his very best game. You know, he has missed a fair amount of time, so you know, we have an understanding of that. We're going to try to put him in positions where he can play to his strengths, but we believe he'll have an immediate impact.
Will, there was a lot of talk preseason when Crosby and Malkin weren't able to start the year with the Penguins. Where would they be by the time Crosby and Malkin were still healthy? Well, it turns out they've been able to hold on pretty well. 29-5 on the year, taking on the Ducks tonight. And they'll finally be at full health, at least when it comes to Crosby and Malkin.
Yeah, a tough test for the Anaheim Ducks, who have not won as many games recently, but thanks to the loser point, have been able to pick up points consistently as they try to hold off the Calgary Flames. Their point percentage, not as high as Calgary's, but still find themselves in second place in the Pacific Division. A tough, tough test. But thankfully at home for them this evening. Now the Pittsburgh Penguins, it don't matter if they're at home or on the road. They've got 10 wins both away from PPG Paints Arena and at PPG Paints Arena. So this is a big game for Pittsburgh and pretty cool to see them get Evgeny Malkin back. I know Brian Burke was on with a couple of different media stations this week saying that he believes the Pittsburgh Penguins are still absolutely in a spot to compete for a Stanley Cup. I'll be curious to see what, if anything, they add at the trade deadline. This is a big, big return for them tonight. 34 games without Evgeny Malkin, season debut, and Sidney Crosby's only played in 22 of those 34 games. He's had a pretty good season as well, quietly, with 5 goals and 24 points in those 22 games. So to get him back is massive, and I still think this is a team that is pretty dangerous, especially if Tristan Jarry can continue what he's done in goal. That was the biggest question coming into the season, Logan, was what was their goaltending going to be? Well, Tristan Jarry, not bad. 931 save percentage, 3 shutouts, and 27 appearances this season. Goals against below 2. And when you can do that with that type of offense, you're going to find a lot of success, and that's exactly what they've done. We talk about the power in the Atlantic. Well, how about the Metropolitan Division? 4 of those teams above 660 when it comes to points percentage. Pittsburgh, Washington, Rangers, and Carolina. Not bad. Can't wait to see this one later on tonight. 8 o'clock puck drop in Anaheim.
The Vancouver Canucks are back in action for the first time in 10 days, Will. Their last game came on January 1st when they beat the Seattle Kraken 5-2. They, of course, dealing with some COVID issues of their own and some Canadian capacity restrictions. Didn't see them play last week against the Islanders or Senators. So now they head out onto the road for an Eastern road trip, similar to the one that the Flames played recently, and will get their biggest test under head coach Bruce Boudreau. How about this upcoming schedule in the next 2 weeks for the Vancouver Canucks? 5 road games that start tonight in Florida. They'll then play Tampa Bay on Thursday, the Carolina Hurricanes Saturday, the Washington Capitals Sunday, then in Nashville next Tuesday to take on the Central Division leading Predators, and then they finally get to come home next Friday and get another peek at these Florida Panthers. It is a grueling stretch for the Vancouver Canucks, who have been off for a 10-day stretch. Head coach Bruce Boudreau has seen some success since taking over, but even he's curious to see how his team's going to fare against some tough opponents on the road.
Well, I'd like to see how we do against teams of this caliber in their building, quite frankly. I mean, it's been a long time since we played, and, you know, we have played some good teams in the stretch here, but I don't think none of the caliber that we're going to meet in the next 7 games. So it's to me, seeing how we come out of this is going to be very important for us.
Well, we thought the Flames had it tough. Florida, Tampa, Carolina. Why don't you throw the Washington Capitals on a back-to-back in there? Oh, and a game against the red-hot Nashville Predators next week. We're truly going to get to see a good look at what this Vancouver team looks like against some tough opponents starting tonight against the Panthers.
Yeah, and all in a span of 7 days, as you mentioned. They'll close out that road trip next Tuesday, so a week from tonight in Nashville, and no easy opponents on that stretch. And the tough thing for Vancouver, and this has been my point the entire time they've gone on the run they've gone on, it's great they've done so, but they've got to keep winning at that pace to gain any ground in the Pacific standings. I mean, all that winning, and they're still just barely over 500 when it comes to points percentage, and that's not going to do them any favors when it comes to trying to climb the Pacific Division standing. So that's the one difference they have with the Calgary Flames, is Calgary afforded themselves the opportunity to go in there and not win any of those games. If that happens to Vancouver, well, it's almost curtains. And so that's been the biggest struggle for the Vancouver Canucks is, okay, because of the early season hole you dug yourselves, now you've got to win at a 700 or 800-point clip for the rest of the season. And this is not going to be an easy stretch. It's going to be very curious to see how they come out of it. But 5 games in 7 days against 5 very tough opponents, and then you come home, and it doesn't get any easier the next couple of games as they're at home to Florida and at home to the St. Louis Blues. A tough 7-game stretch for the Vancouver Canucks, and we're going to get a pretty good answer as to where they are. Are they going to make themselves, are they going to get themselves, I should say, into the competitive window and fight for a playoff spot, or is their season going to be done come next week? We'll find out here pretty quickly, because that is a tough, tough stretch for the Canucks.
And, well, excuse me, and how about this for a premium matchup in the NHL tonight? Well, the Colorado Avalanche at the Nashville Predators for a 6 p.m. puck drop. 3 of 4 meetings this season between the teams. Avalanche won 6-2 at home in November. Preds won 5-2 in Nashville on December 16th. But the Predators have been red hot. We just mentioned that the Canucks aren't going to enjoy going to Nashville. It's because they've been so good of late. They're 23-11-2. Good for first in the Central, 1 point up on the Blues, and 2 up on the Avs. The Nationals won 4 in a row. They're 11-1-1 in their past 13 games. They'll take on an Avalanche team that's won 5 straight and is 10-1-0 in their past 11 games, coming off a 4-3 win against the Kraken on Monday. The Avalanche lead the NHL in goals per game at 4.31 and have 5 players who have already scored at least 30 points this season. Of course, Landeskog, McKinnon, Rantanen, no, led by Nazem Kadri, 46 points, 13 goals, and 33 assists in 29 games. This should be a premier matchup in the Central Division.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a Nashville team who, for I don't think anybody had them doing what they've done this season. I think many on the high end, if you were still loving what Nashville had done and what the roster was going to give you, you probably had them on the playoff bubble, maybe competing for a wild card spot. Well, here they are approaching game 40 still in top spot in the Central Division. Now, that being said, as we've made note of many times in the last couple of days, the Avalanche have four games in hand on both Nashville and St. Louis. Both of these teams come into this game red hot. You mentioned Nashville's run. How about the Avalanche, who have won five in a row and nine of their last 10? They are, you know, finally healthy for the first time all season, and they are doing what many expected them to do this season coming in, and that is just run over every team they face. The good news for Nashville, you mentioned the fact that they beat Colorado last time. It was at Bridgestone Arena 5-2. It's a good thing they're not playing at Ball Arena in Denver. The Avalanche, with one of the best home records in the league, at 14-2-1. And not so good on the road at 8-6-1. So that is advantage Nashville going into this game. But just the way Colorado's playing right now, Grubauer not there anymore, doesn't seem to matter. I know that was a big question going into the year. And early on, maybe you could say that that was a problem. But of late, hey, hasn't been an issue for Darcy Kuemper. He has done just fine in the Avalanche net. UC Saros has been the story in Nashville. So a pretty good goaltending matchup in this game as well. Looking forward to it. And yeah, if I was to circle one matchup this evening in the NHL, no offense to Toronto and Vegas, which might be more enticing for Flames fans, I might go the Avalanche and Denver. The Avalanche and Nashville. It's the same team when you say the Avalanche and Denver.
It is.
Yeah, that's weird. Avalanche and Nashville. 6 o'clock start. You can bet I'll be firing that up on NHL Live tonight.
You mean you won't use your NHL Live to watch one of these other games, Will? What about the Lightning and the Sabres at 5? No? How about the Blackhawks at the Blue Jackets, where Seth Jones is not making his return to Columbus? That's got to be... No. Red Wing Sharks?
Just quickly, by the way, our friend Aaron Portsline, did you see what he put on Twitter earlier today?
I saw that Jones isn't playing because of a COVID test, but did I miss something else from Portsline?
Well, maybe this has to do with it. I doubt it, though, because you would think the Chicago Blackhawks would have said something. Seth Jones did not address Chicago or Columbus media after today's pregame skate. One Blackhawks PR staffer pulled a curtain in the hallway outside Chicago's dressing room to walk Jones out a back entrance. The other, but an hour later, said he, quote, wasn't able to get Jones, end quote, before he left. So... again, maybe it is COVID-related, but that sure sounds fishy to allow him to go out a back entrance. Seth Jones not wanting to face the music today in Columbus. And, hey, it turns out he's not playing because of a positive COVID test. So no drama in that game, despite the fact that there maybe could have been some. And you can guarantee he would have been hearing the Boo Birds tonight in Columbus.
A couple of quick NHL news and notes off the ice. Bruins have signed goaltender Tuukka Rask to a one-year, $1 million deal.
Who saw that coming?
Absolutely everybody. Will only earn $545,000 since he's signing so late in the season. He did sign a PTO with the AHL's Providence Bruins.
And lit it up?
He was aiming to get into a game or two, but he did not.
Oh.
After their games were postponed due to COVID issues. So he is back with the Boston Bruins. A legendary name in Detroit is back, as they have hired Nick Lidstrom as their VP of hockey operations. So a couple of Detroit legends in Steve Yzerman and Nick Lidstrom now running the show there. Minnesota Wild signed John Merrill to a three-year, $3.6 million extension. That comes with an AAV of $2.1 million. He has 3 goals and 8 assists in 33 games with Minnesota this season. And, of course, this one was a little bit interesting earlier today, Will, and maybe a topic for us to dive into later the week. But Ron Hextall, who still holds an NHL front office job GMing the Pittsburgh Penguins, taking some criticism from Flyers legend and executive Bobby Clark over the selection of Nolan Patrick in the 2017 NHL draft, where he said that none of the scouts wanted to make the pick, but Hextall needed to make a splash, and that's why they went with Nolan Patrick. The rest of the group wanted them to take Cale Makar with the second overall pick in that draft. So a bit of a beating that Hextall takes from his former boss in Philly.
Yeah, the audio courtesy, the Cam Jansen and Andy Strickland podcast. Here is Bobby Clark on everything surrounding Nolan Patrick and Ron Hextall.
he alienated everybody right away. He shut his door. He locked the doors. He was the boss, and nobody else was part of it. We end up drafting. We get the second pick in the draft, and we end up drafting Nolan Patrick. None of our scouts wanted Nolan Patrick. It wasn't, I mean, I don't know where Patrick should have gone after his performances in Brown, and he's a pretty good player, but he certainly, they wanted Makar. Of course, he went next. No, he's a superstar, and Patrick hasn't played number, but Hextall made that choice himself. And there were other choices that were made in our drafts that we're paying for. You know, we've got two or three first-round picks that are never going to play. And that's why we're struggling. Hexy made some huge mistakes. And
hey, he gave the Blues Braden Schenn, too, you know? So, I mean, so...
That was just as bad. You know, nobody knew it. Hexy made that on his own. All our scouts, it was at the draft. Yeah. Our scouts were so mad at Hexy for doing that. We also had a chance to get O'Reilly from Buffalo, but we didn't. Obviously, that was the manager's decision, but it was another one that the scouts weren't consulted on.
There you go. Just one of the most interesting clips you'll ever hear from an NHL executive when talking about maybe a former colleague. And just quickly, because you mentioned it, I wanted to play this audio.
Sure.
Elliot Friedman on the hiring of Lidstrom in Detroit.
And man, does this mean he possibly becomes general manager sometime down the road? We see in LA Luke Robitaille tight with Rob Blake and Nelson Emerson.
Yep.
That kind of setup. Is that because in Tampa Bay he kind of got plunked in there? It wasn't his home, and he surrounded himself with non-Detroit people. Is this kind of like that kind of setup here in Detroit now, Elliot?
Well, they have a media conference in about 15 minutes, so I'm going to, no offense, Gord, but I'm going to dust you in about 10 so that I can go listen to that and find out some better answers to these questions. First of all, I think it's an out-of-the-park Grand Slam hire. Nicholas Lidstrom, he's a smart, honest guy, and I think it's tremendous, and I see all the Red Wings fans celebrating on social media. And if I was a Red Wings fan, I would feel that way too. I'm very curious to see what it means. I believe Lidstrom is still living in Sweden. Like, is he going to be coming? He had said before that, and I was looking at his book today. I was just picking it out, The Pursuit of Perfection. And he talked about how he thought about maybe coming back to North America at some point, but it wouldn't be until his kids were older. So I'm curious about all of that. I think we'll find out some answers in this media conference about what exactly it means. But my initial reaction is, wow, what a great hire for Detroit.
Pretty good hire. And all of a sudden, Steve Yzerman bringing over all his buddies. And, this is a team that I think a lot of people were, looking at it and saying they're finally taking those steps. And Yzerman's done some really good things. Obviously, we know what he did in Tampa, and now as he's in Detroit, they're slowly getting out of some of the bad contracts they were in. They've drafted really well here the last couple of years, and to bring on a guy like Nicholas Lidstrom is an absolute home run hire, and I don't think anyone saw it coming, and we'll see exactly what that or how that plays out the next couple of years here, but still, if I was a Red Wings fan, to Elliot's point, I would be celebrating as well.
Couple news notes just quickly to finish off headlines here, Will. Hockey Canada has announced the women's team roster for the 2022 Olympics, headlined by Marie-Philippe Poulin and Rebecca Johnston. The two women will represent Canada for the fourth time in their careers after winning Olympic gold in 2010 and 2014. And, of course, coming home with silver in 2018. 23-player roster includes three goaltenders, seven defensemen, and 13 forwards, announced virtually by Hockey Canada. 13 women return from the team that lost 3-2 in a shootout to the United States in the 2018 gold medal game. Canada opens its bid to reclaim gold February 3rd, the day before the opening ceremonies begin in Beijing. Gold medal game set for February 16th. In baseball, Jeff Passan of ESPN says that baseball's owners and players union plan to hold a bargaining session on Thursday. That meeting will mark the first substantive conversation between the two sides since the beginning of the lockout 40 days ago. And it certainly didn't take long for Brian Flores to gain interest in a head coaching job after being fired by the Dolphins on Monday. NFL Network's Tom Pelissero, Will, says that he has an interview with the Chicago Bears this week, just days after being fired by the Dolphins.
Yes, and it'll be interesting to see. And we talked about it yesterday that Adam Schefter said that don't be surprised to see Brian Flores' name in this hiring cycle across the NFL. And we're already seeing that not even a day later as he's set to interview in Chicago. I don't think that'll be his only interview, but we'll see. Chicago's put out quite a wide net of different coordinators, including both in Buffalo. So it'll be interesting to see where this plays out for Chicago, who finally tries to get one right when it comes to a coach hiring, as it has not worked out. And you know, a lot of that's related to the quarterback, but still, that is going to be one to watch. And Brian Flores, I would not be surprised if he is back on an NFL sideline as a head coach in 2022. He is Logan Gordon, and that is the Big Show Headlines, brought to you every day by Hyatt Infinity, offering winter tire swaps from just $59.95. Book your appointment now at Calgary's original Infinity destination, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane. We'll come back and close out the final hour of the Big Show on your Tuesday. Lots happening, including a final look at the Toronto Raptors. We have not talked about them today, but a 5:30 tip-off against the Phoenix Suns, a marquee matchup for the Raptors, who have done well of late. And if you're betting money on the Raptors, they've done pretty good against the spread as of late. We'll explain that and more as we continue. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Now, back to the Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Thanks, as always, for tuning in today. The Big Show into its final segment of your Tuesday afternoon. Flames talk coming up at the top of the hour. Calgary Flames not back in action until Thursday when they take on Ottawa at the Dome. And they don't play again until next week. It's a bit of a slow burn when it comes to the Flames, but no doubt about it, Steinberg and Rose will be taking you through a variety of subjects regarding the Calgary Flames. Back at practice today. That's coming up at the top of the hour. And a reminder, there's so many ways to listen to us. 960 on your AM radio. Stream us at sportsnet.ca/960, or even tell your smart speaker to play Sportsnet 960. Our podcasts also available now on Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon. Subscribe now. We put up every hour of the show. If you missed anything from today, including last hour with a preview of the Bengals and the Raiders with Charlie Goldsmith and David Amber of Sportsnet and Hockey Net in Canada for all things NHL, which, by the way, I don't know if you did quickly mention it in headlines or not, Logan, but the All-Star coaches have been decided. Where do you come down on an NHL All-Star game this year? I know it was a big talk with the Olympics involved, but now with no Olympics, I think more people are kind of on board. I'm indifferent to NHL All-Star games anyways. But yeah, it's going to happen. And the coaches have been announced. And the players will be announced coming up on Thursday of this week.
I'm generally anti-All-Star game in general for any sport. They do very little for me. I think it's an interesting accolade. And I think that it's, to me, a more interesting stat to keep for a player's record more than anything that actually comes of the weekend or the events that take place. I'm sure it's a great fan event. This year especially, I know with the Olympics not going on, the NHL wanted to do a showcase and give, you know, a good weekend of hockey events to their new broadcast partners down south. But I don't know, Will, doesn't it just seem like this year of all years with the pandemic and everything that's going on that even nowadays, traveling and bringing a large group of people in from different areas of the continent seems like a bad idea at this point? I mean, it's almost the same. I know the restrictions would be different, but I don't know. Do the Flames really get excited about Johnny Gaudreau going to the All-Star game? What if he gets COVID there and isn't able to come back or misses a game or two? Isn't it the same sort of conversation that maybe we're just not in the right, I don't know, time and space for something that doesn't actually have any impact on our season. I don't know. I'm generally not an all-star fan as it is. But to me, this just seems like another year where it's like, okay, travel and hotel and quarantine and restrictions and all that sort of things. I mean, we're barely getting an NHL schedule put through the next couple of weeks. We got to force an all-star game in there too.
Yeah, and now again, like I say, with no Olympics, it doesn't feel as forced. So we'll see. You know, again, we're still waiting for the re-release of the schedule and what that actually looks like. I know a big chunk of that will be eaten up by the Olympic break. Not all of it, but certainly a big chunk of it. And I think we're only a few days away here from getting the re-release of the schedule, and we'll start to figure out what the Flames' final 50-plus games or 40-plus games looks like here, as they've got a lot of ground to make up. We talk about the Avalanche and games in hand. The Flames are in a very similar spot, as they've got the second-best points percentage in the Pacific Division, trailing just Vegas, and they've got 5 games in hand on Vegas and Anaheim, who occupy the top 2 spots, just 5 points back of Anaheim with 5 games in hand. I think you like where you're at if you're the Calgary Flames. And
where are you on an all-star game? Like, am I out to lunch?
Like, no, like I said, as a kid, you loved them because, you know, it was like, as a kid, I was probably more invested and liked the skills competition more than I actually did the game. I thought when they changed the format to 3-on-3, it was a little bit more exciting, especially when they added an incentive for the players. It raised their give-a-crap meter, which I thought was good. But yeah, I mean, overall, I could probably live without an all-star game. Like, for example, I can tell you I've never watched a second of a Pro Bowl. I never will. You know, that's different. NBA all-star game, same thing, couldn't care. Because it's 165 to 160. They don't play defense. They're stupid plays. But as a kid, loved the NBA Saturday night, the slam dunk contest, three-point contest, all of that. So, yeah, I've always been bigger, especially when it comes to the 3 of 4 big 4 sports in North America. Again, NFL, couldn't really tell you that I care ever at any point, even when I was a kid. And then Major League Baseball, NBA and NHL, I was more of a fan of the skills side of it than I was the actual game. I'll watch the Home Run Derby. I've always been a nerd for it, and couldn't really care about the game. So that's where I'm at on it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a fan thing to it. I've never seen one in person. I agree with you. As a kid, it was always cool to imagine those lines that you know, probably messed around with playing an NHL video game, but I just think with the logistics nightmare that it's got to be for the travel and everything, Will, and we're still dealing with quarantine and, you know, all these sort of things. Like, for Canadian teams to send guys to the All-Star game has to be a pretty precarious situation still, because they'd be stuck in the United States for 10 days, right? I mean, are you over, like, if you're Vancouver, are you like, oh, yeah, Pedersen, Demko, go ahead and just for the weekend and then maybe come back in 10 days. I just think that from a logistics standpoint, it seems like a bad idea this year.
Yeah, it's not great. I certainly cannot disagree with you there. And I know there's some texts that come in at 960-960. Of course, the fan feedback line is always open to you. They can't get the regular season games done. Why an all-star game? And it's completely ridiculous to have an all-star game this year. There's a couple of thoughts at 960-960, and I think a lot of people feel that way. I know I certainly felt that way last year when the NBA had an all-star game. The NHL, of course, didn't do one with the shortened year, but I know there was a thought about that with the NBA last season. Like, why are you having one in a pandemic? I can see why that's a thought this year with the NHL, but hey, they're going to have it, and it was promised as part of their TV deal, and at the end of the day, it is a business, but you know, again, for me, it's always been about the skills competition and not the game. And I think that's continued, especially with the way that 3-on-3 has kind of changed. And we've seen it in regular season overtime. It's not as exciting as when it was first launched. And I think the same can be said. The very first year they changed the All-Star Game format to 3-on-3, it was fun. Ever since then, it slowly died down. So that's where it is when it comes to the All-Star Game. And again, the players, if you do care, are going to be unveiled on Thursday, I believe, at 4:45 Calgary time. And then one more text comes in. The All-Star game really is the skills competition, and that's it. No one has ever watched the actual game itself. As a kid, I watched the skills competition and then totally forgot about the actual game the day later. And I think a lot of people would be like that, certainly as a kid. You like the skills competition. Or the NHL has gotten a little bit wonky with some of the things they've done, but it's still better than anything else. By the way, there was some news that came down during the commercial break. Didn't surprise anybody, Logan. We were waiting for this. Of course, we saw the handful of coaches that were fired on Monday in the NFL. You can add one more to that list as today, just moments ago, it was announced that the New York Giants have fired head coach Joe Judge after two seasons, 6-10 in 2020, 4-13 in 2021. He'll finish his coaching career with the Giants with a record of 10-23, a win percentage just barely over 300. And it was pretty clear as the season went on this year that this guy had no control of his locker room, and really the only option for the Giants was to fire Joe Judge.
I'm trying to wonder and think through this process as to what took so long, especially when David Gettleman did his retirement the other day. When you have questions about the coach, Will, and you're going through this process anyways, and the GM takes himself out of consideration and sort of moves away from the organization, wouldn't you have done the same with Joe Judge on that day as well? I guess I have respect for them going through their process and wanting to make sure that Joe Judge got his fair shake of things at the end of it. But if I'm looking for a new GM anyways, and I have questions about the coach and his abilities, why would I saddle a new GM with this guy? Like, what new GM would want to come in and have to make the decision to fire Joe Judge himself? Wouldn't you just give that GM the clean slate to bring in the guy that he wants and is comfortable with instead of going through this headache again? I guess it's just a couple of days and it doesn't make much of a difference, but I thought as soon as Gettleman announced his retirement that it probably spelled the end of Joe Judge's time there, period, because we have that conversation all the time in any sport, Will, right? The GM and the coach relationship is a very important one, and I couldn't see a world where Joe Judge had a leg to stand on for a new GM. It's not like he's had a successful record in New York and the new GM would have loved to start things off with Joe Judge. I just don't think that that was ever a consideration. I'm surprised it took this long. The Giants were just awful this year after some terrible offseason moves from both of them, you know, Gettleman bringing in all these offensive weapons that Joe Judge got no production out of. I think the Giants are better off cleaning house in the GM and the head coaching spot like they've now done today.
Yeah, I guess for me, it's not like they waited a week. Like, we're talking about a day, right? So it's not like I don't have as big an issue as you do. But that being said, yeah, I think many expected the news to come yesterday. Joe Judge out after two seasons as Giants head coach. And you just look at this season and where it really soured for me, and I'm not even a Giants fan, is just the arrogance of this guy. And why are you being arrogant when you've done nothing to be deserving? And nobody should ever be as arrogant as Joe Judge was at times this season. But it's like, what have you done to be this arrogant? I don't really understand where this is coming from. You were a special teams coordinator on Bill Belichick's Patriots team, and you've come in here and really have shown nothing. So, again, they wait a day after Gettleman announces his retirement, and it sounds like the new GM will be put in place first and then a new head coach in New York, to your point about the importance of the GM and head coach relationship. And, hey, I mean, the Giants, it was important to do this now, not only because of the GM, but, of course, because of the way the NFL coaching cycle and the coaching hiring cycle works in the NFL. And that is, everything will be done here in the next, a month? Not even a month. We'll start to see some names surface for Giants when it comes to interviews, and we usually get every coach in place by or around the Super Bowl, depending who you hire and where their team gets knocked out. But, shouldn't be surprised that Joe Judge is out after two seasons as the head coach of the New York Giants. So that news coming down, as I say, in the commercial break that has just happened. And lastly, tip off tonight at 5:30. We don't talk a lot of NBA on this program, but we will start to do so as this new show evolves, Logan. And the Toronto Raptors have won 6 games in a row. A tough test tonight against the Phoenix Suns, who are, of course, coming off an NBA Finals berth last year, have been one of the best teams in the NBA all season. It's been a weird year, much like the NHL. You've seen guys across the NBA fly in and out of COVID protocol. The Phoenix Suns come into tonight playing against the Raptors team, who's red hot. 9 of the last 12 games, the Raptors have been good. You can put that check mark when it comes to against the spread. So a team that has been, you know, all of a sudden trading the conversation. The NHL trade deadline comes later than the NBA's trade deadline, but we're about a month away, and all of a sudden people are asking if the Raptors, who are a 7th seed right now in the Eastern Conference, should be sellers or buyers at the deadline. A very similar conversation to what they had last season. They don't have big names that are pending free agents a la Kyle Lowry last season, but all of a sudden people talking about this team and what they should do at the deadline. And I think we're about where we expected the Raptors to be, and that is kind of on the playoff bubble as they sit the 7th seed in the Eastern Conference entering action tonight.
Yeah, I think the Raptors are an interesting case study when you look at the NBA as a whole, Will, because you mentioned they're red hot. They've won their last 6. They're 7-3 in their last 10, and that's only put them 3 games above 500 and on the fringe of a playoff spot. So I think you can see the good in Toronto, and you can see the success that Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet are starting to have as a duo going forward. But as an organization, you have to know the right time to go for it and the right time to make those trade deadline moves or to make yourself a contender. And I think that the next couple of weeks for the Raptors will probably make that decision for Bobby Webster, Masai Ujiri, and the rest of the brain trust in Toronto. Because you look at going back to that championship year for them when they brought in Kawhi Leonard. Yes, that's a massive add and that changes things, but they had other good pieces there. They were ready to contend, right? They had a couple of years in the playoffs. They were a constant playoff threat year after year, but they needed that guy to take them over the top. This version of the Raptors with Gary Trent Jr., Siakam, VanVleet, Scottie Barnes, I don't think they've proven that yet. So I'm still wait and see for this group before I'm pushing my chips all in and giving them that boost come trade deadline, whether that's a veteran shooter, some help in the middle, that sort of stuff, because I think you need to give it time to develop, and there's nothing wrong with that. Scottie Barnes is still young, right? I mean, coming in as a 4th overall pick.
Man, he's been fun to watch.
He has been, and learning to win and learning to become a perennial playoff team, I think, is all part of it, and I think when the time is right, the Raptors will go out and have shown they'll go out and make those moves and spend the money that needs to be spent to go into contender mode. I just don't know that we're there yet.
I'm with you. I think you kind of want to ride this one out and see, you know, where you end up at the end of the season. If you make the playoffs, great. And if you don't, well, I don't think anyone expected you to anyways. And again, the biggest conversation going into the year was, especially when you look at the reaction at the NBA draft, they rolled the dice on Scottie Barnes, and so far to this point in the year, it's paid off. And for all the critics of that pick when it was made, it's kind of hard to find a critic of what Scottie Barnes has done for the Raptors this season. You mentioned Fred VanVleet, who's coming off an Eastern Conference Player of the Week nod. Pascal Siakam is slowly coming into his own. I know they paid him that big money, and it yet hasn't come together all at once for him. But he's finally on the verge. And again, I think if they can just be where they're at and remain competitive, you're pretty happy for the Raptors' brain trust. Lastly, Major League Baseball and the Players Association are back at the table. 42-day break. I think we expected that. Negotiations going to return on Thursday. And I think for many people, Logan, until we got to really the middle of January, which we're on the verge of right now, with catchers and pitchers set to report at the end of February, you've still got a bit of wiggle room here. I don't think the Major League Baseball season is going to lose any games, but you're hoping these negotiations, at least the initial ones, after that long break where nobody was worried in the winter, you weren't talking. If you start to talk now and things go well, well, you're going to be happy if you're a baseball fan. But this first couple of negotiations, it'll be interesting to see how far apart the sides are. And, hey, I don't think they're going to lose any games, but we'll get a pretty good idea here when talks resume on Thursday.
Fingers crossed. I, as an NHL fan, and Will, I know you've gone through this. If you're listening, you've gone through this in some way, shape, or form. These CBA negotiations are so draining. The back and forth, both sides are better off to be playing baseball and to get things going for spring training. So why we have to go through these asinine back and forths over splitting, you know, I get it. Money rules everything. It's a big deal to them, and you're splitting billions of dollars in revenue. I get it. But at the end of the day, if you guys aren't out there playing baseball or football or hockey or any of it, then you don't make any of that money and you won't have anything to argue over. So I hope it's one of those situations, Will, where we can, you know, be the bigger men and women in the room when they have these discussions and realize that at the end of the day, we're better off to be playing than arguing in boardrooms or, I guess, I don't know, over Zoom. I guess Paston said these are all virtual meetings now anyways. But anyways, I don't think it matters. We're better off to be playing sports than arguing over how it gets done in a CBA. At the end of the day, I hope this is a good sign for baseball leading into the spring.
The league and the Players Association set to return to negotiations Thursday when it comes to the MLB lockout. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Will Nault. Again, thank you to David Amber, Charlie Goldsmith, and Peter Labardius. And thanks to you for listening to another edition of The Big Show, live from the iconic Electric End Controls downtown studio. When we come back from break, it's a kickoff of episode 2 of the afternoon edition of Flames Talk. Pat Steinberg, Matty Rose take you through the Flames news next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.